It looks ridiculous.
It's just like so professional looking.
Overwrought. Yeah, yeah. Cool.
But anyways, they talked about how they switched to the ones coming from underneath, so
yeah,
you don't block.
You can see. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you can get a. Yeah, just trying to, like, maybe this is a better configuration from the bottom. If you go way out like that, it's a little, the center of gravity is a little tipsy. So,
I see.
But you can get these boom arms that clip on the side of a table and will swing out in front of you. So you can have your drink and your book and whatever.
That fourth person joining us?
Yeah, the ghost rider there.
I see. It's tipsy.
Yeah, but that's if you swing way out. And this is a fairly heavy mic. I have a black fleece, like, tablecloth blanket thing that will stop the but
all right.
as we go,
let's get the show on the road. Are we recording?
Yeah, I just hit record. Yeah, yeah. So today is test day. This is interesting because I have the things on. I can't hear what the so it's also it's on the track. Well, it's the yeah, it's well, I preloaded some our theme song on here, and I know that these three that I'm kind of mashing together, done it before, so I'm hoping this ghost tick actually works. It's actually kind of cool because you can track these things like that.
So is it going?
Yeah, no, it's going. It's recording. So I told you it's recording, and this the red guy is the channel for the fader you can see there for this thing. So, today's test day, and we're chatting in the studio, in the office. This is Chris Duffel.
Rafael Morales.
Luis Martinez.
First episode with Luis. Awesome. So, this is the Beauty of Every New podcast where we talk about art, architecture, Catholicism, and the life of the faith. And to today, do you want to do the tech thing, or do you want to do Lisa's thesis today? Let's do your thing. You're here.
Okay.
I don't know how much longer you're going to be here.
Actually, I'm not coming tomorrow.
You're not coming tomorrow? Okay, great. Yeah. We'll do your thing today.
Okay.
No worries. So one of the things that Raf and I talked about is in practicing architecture and designing for, you know, church conditions and church clients, sometimes the buildings are sacred in nature. Sort of fundamentally, it's a place of worship, it's a church. Sometimes the client demands something like a school or an office building. And the amount of times that you get to actually do this sort of work, like the reps you get professionally are very few, right? Like we have a boss, John, who he has been doing church work, in scare quotes, for 30 years. Yeah. And we think like, oh, Jackson Ryan's done churches for a long time. And then when you list all of them, it's not like there are hundreds of churches, not even dozens. Like a good career, you may get 10 shots, and that's a lot of churches to do, right? Odds are your typical practice is not one where, A, the church is growing. Like if you're practicing in, you know, New Hampshire, they're just selling buildings. Like I was talking to the director of construction at a conference recently, it wasn't really a construction office. It's a real estate and construction office. Because it's mostly real estate and it's mostly selling things. Like they're just not growing. So if you're in a part of the United States where you're growing and you have the calling, quite frankly, on your life to do work for the church, and you can get the work for the church, and they're actually church buildings that the church client wants, all of these things have to coalesce. And all this just to say, it's not like something that you can just practice all the time, all the way through. And one thing that Raf and I have been talking about is wanting to engage in discussion with people like yourself who are early on in your career and who have an interest in sacred architecture and really thinking with the mind of the church and the heart of the church about what's kind of productive for the future. Mm-hmm. And not like kind of blind quotation, yeah. A kind of like if it looks like it's old, then it's good. You know, but something that's you know, you kind of breathe with both lungs, to borrow an analogy that's not about East-West, but about old and new. And that's the name of the podcast, Beauty Ever New. So really wanted to just talk shop about your thesis idea. You are a student at University of Houston, mm-hmm. here in Houston. It's not a school that has a program in sacred architecture. So it's a thing you're choosing, right,
yeah.
From the outset. We should just say this is a program type, a client type, and a building type that you, in some ways, are just saying, here's what I'm interested in. Here's what I want to contribute to the body of knowledge of architecture. Yeah, give us a little kind of rundown of what you're thinking, what the kind of investigation is for the thesis, and yeah.
Well, I think what I
liked. Lean into the mic a little bit when you talk. Yeah,
I good. I liked what you said in regards to the breathe with both lungs analogy. I think that's mainly what I'm trying to explore with my thesis, just because. I mean, throughout my career and even before that, I've been drawn to contemporary architecture just because, well, especially at the start of my architecture career, I think mainly because you're told that that's, you know, what people should build, what architecture should build nowadays.
Even if only implicitly told.
Yes.
Like, it's not sort of top down, but like, you have to do this.
Yeah, no one tells you, this is the only thing
you can do. Sort of collectively develop a taste for it.
Yeah. But then, as I, you know, started designing these things for my school project, I started to question myself, because a lot of times when I go, you know, Rafa will be familiar with this, perhaps you too in other contexts, but when you go to Mexico and you're around really old buildings, right?
Yeah.
There's a sense of, I don't know, there's a sense of something very beautiful happening there, right? Mm. Like something intrinsically, like, or written in our souls almost. Mm. That sounds kind of poetic or cheesy, but it's true, and I don't feel that with contemporary architecture most of the times. So I started to question myself, and like also in the aspect of most people, I feel like, are drawn to like small European cities, for example.
Yeah.
Like, why is that the case? Why do most people want to go to these places instead of, you know, visit a super modern museum or something like that? And I think it's because there's something written in our hearts or in our minds. In the way we're wired to like these things, and partially, I mean, that's a whole nother conversation, but
yeah.
I think it's because of how God designed mathematics and physics.
Sure, yeah.
But I think ultimately you can see a universal attraction to these spaces.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to explore with my thesis, like, why is that the case? How can we, I guess, that leads into the question of how can you take what is old and good, but also not just remain there, right? How can you move forward and how can you progress? So that's where the modernism or like the contemporary aspect of it comes in. Like, how can you use modern technologies or, you know, modern materials in that context? Then.
Yeah. So if I understand you correctly, what you're doing is your project is rooted in today, right? Like it's a project that will be built, let's say, conceptually today, but you're dealing with this, you know, tradition of the church, the program, I should say. You want to talk about the program a little bit? Or the
So obviously, in order to make a successful thesis project, I think, and Rafa was a big help in this, but you have to contextualize it, right?
Yeah.
And I think we all three are familiar with Clear Creek Monastery, Benedictine Monastery up in Oklahoma. They are starting to build a priory in New Mexico with the hopes of, you know, eventually that becoming a new abbey since they're growing so much. So my thesis will be kind of contextualized around that. I will be, quote unquote, designing for the Benedictine monks of Salem. The new monastery in New Mexico, and that's where
we'll
explore.
So use the term program for those who are listening who are not in the architecture circle. Like we are the program is basically a client type and a building type and a kind of description of what the building is for functionally. Right, you have maybe as a bedrock to this desire to engage with what it means to build something beautiful and traditional today. And it's a monastery. So it would be a place for the monks to live, quite literally tied to a very real project. A lot of times architectural theses have ideas or investigations that may or may not seem tethered to reality, but yours is very, very much tied to a very real client. Yeah. And a real project. So that's real exciting.
Well, I think that's kind of needed in this context, and Rafa told me this, especially doing a thesis at the University of Houston, where all the professors are quite, you know, contemporary and progressive in their works. You need to say, okay, you need to justify basically why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
And the monks want to build a monastery that lasts 1,000 years.
That's awesome.
So that's one of the principles that you will have to design around, right? And all their kind of traditional leanings and all that. So in a way, that's kind of baked into the way I'm describing my thesis. So I guess, how can I best word this? The lives of the monks are quite rigid, right, and constricted by rules, like rule of Saint Benedict, and even, you know, just rules that the abbot, you know,
for prayer and work and obedience, and
And I think there is a parallel you can draw with the restrictions that they impose in their own lives, and the freedom that that gives them, and then the restrictions that you could have in architecture, in terms of program, in terms of form and everything, but still be free to be creative within those constraints. And that's kind of where I'm heading with the thesis. How could you be innovative, if that's a word you want to use, or like, how could you incorporate modern or contemporary aspects of architecture into an order that is so traditional and that has so many constraints like built into their way of life?
No, it's helpful. One of these things that I'm thinking of, and I think we both, Ralph and I, for these types of conversations, is that we would talk with other people who are at schools that aren't, you know, UVA or Notre Dame, people that all the professors are basically swimming in the same sort of professional and like cultural milieu. U of H is not that way, and Rice is definitely not that way. But individual people have, you know, charisms and callings and interests. So I'm going to talk about your project a little bit, and specifically, I mean, what's interesting to me about it is the client is kind of a hyper client, right? It's not suburban, whitewashed parish somewhere that has like no place and no identity, and everyone, like, their social favorite spot is like Facebook on their phone. Like, it's got a context, it's got a very specific, and in some ways, like you said, rigorous client demand, which the rigor doesn't produce suppressive spirits, but in some ways is more freeing because true obedience is, you know, effortless in the end, even though it may be difficult, it require it, it produces a kind of freedom in the soul. So is your thesis, this is kind of investigative questions here, and feel free to butt in or chop us off here. You're being nice and nice and the sensei in the corner. Is your thesis more about what you first said? Like, how do we think about doing something beautiful today for the church that respects tradition and is modern, in the modern context, dealing with modern materials? Or is it about re-implementing a Benedictine charism in Mexico? Or is it about
New Mexico?
Yes. Oh, it's not in Mexico?
No.
Oh, I thought it was in Mexico.
No.
I was more excited about that. In New Mexico.
In the desert.
Yes.
In the desert, okay.
In itself is going to be interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that is good. Or, I mean, is the whenever I went through pre-thesis at Rice, they talked about a few things that are real important, right? One of them is picking the mode of investigation architecturally. And there's typically, in order for, you can't do all things well at all points, right?
Of course.
Board games that have 19,000 mechanics never work. Buildings that throw the kitchen sink at it and everything never work. Theses that have too many priorities don't seem clear enough. So do you have an idea right now of what the architectural mode of investigation is? Is it the skin? Is it the site planning? Is it the interiors? Is the structure?
I'm not quite sure. I think, as probably anyone familiar with creating a thesis will know, it is an explorative process, even, you know, as you craft it.
Sure.
So I'm not really sure. Those are the questions I'm exploring. I'm going to, I think, have to find out as I go.
Yeah.
But we have talked about kind of honing in on certain areas of or parts of the monastery, generalizing and addressing the whole thing. So maybe placing the buildings in their proper location. But at the same time, obviously, like you said, I can't make everything hyper detailed because would not take 1 year, and it would be mediocre probably if I did. So maybe concentrating on the church, or even like the altar of the church or the sanctuary, right? And then maybe the room of a monk or something like that, or the house of the abbot, and addressing everything, but kind of doing hyper details on just certain aspects.
That makes sense. I mean, one of the things that's important for coming off, if you had a thing.
Oh, I was going to say something.
Go for it. Yeah, go for it.
No, I was going to say that I think an underappreciated aspect of really all of life, but when you're in school especially, that they don't teach you is the time management aspect of things. Oh, yeah. Because when you're in school, you have this feeling that you have time for everything. Mm-hmm. You know, time is an endless horizon, and you can just fill it with whatever you want.
Opposite, yeah.
And I think that the older I've gotten, the more I realize that that's a lie. That's false. And it is the way you thrive is in the elimination of whatever is unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And so in regards to your thesis, and this is what we were talking about the other day, which was the monks are really disciplined in a way they have. They have denied most of the world in favor of this very particular way of life, right? Yeah. And so in your thesis, you two are, you know, part of what I think has been the problem of modern architecture, especially in relation to churches, is that every design, every new Catholic church was a completely new invention from the ground up. Yeah. So they were having to literally reinvent the sanctuary, where the altar goes, where the pulpit goes, and why. And and so when you're having to reinvent the world every single time, the results will be mediocre, right?
The more
that you can claim as an assumption that is being made or taken, the more time you will have to make that beautiful. And so I think, Chris, you and I have talked about this, how I forget where I read this quote, but I thought it was a very profound quote, where they basically said, you know, the liturgy was under development for the first whatever, hundreds of years of the church history. But then it really settles with Pope St. Gregory, you know. So he settles and kind of codifies the liturgy. And then after that, that's when you see the explosion of a kind of Gothic architecture and just like all of this innovation that comes after the liturgy kind of settles down. And what this person was saying was that the Holy Spirit found a new avenue to express, you know, to express the kind of beauty and holiness of the church, because the liturgy was now settled and therefore everything else exploded. And so I think in your thinking about the thesis, you almost have to do something similar where nail down as much as you think you can nail down, as much as you think is proper to nail down, so that you free yourself up to like spend a lot of time detailing an altar. You know what I mean?
So
I think the time management aspect of a thesis is overlooked. You know?
Time management and the thesis as a thing, like the purpose of it, right? It's sort of ontology. Like what it is it's a thing that is oriented towards contributing to the disciplinary knowledge of architecture, right? So it's not just that you will design a building that someone can look at and say, oh, that's beautiful, but that you have, like Rafa said, you've bracketed off many things. Most things you've said no to, meaning they're not points of investigation. You may say, I'm going to take certain structural systems as a given, right? Yeah. Needs to last forever, full stone width walls, right? And you just say, that's a decision. I'm somewhat arbitrarily making it based on facts, and it could be different, but you just say, these things are fixed, and given these norms, here's the world that inside, it's like the TARDIS, like bigger on the inside than the outside once you've defined the walls of the thing. The function of a thesis is that you have a very specific thing, like it's got a finite number of pages to write, let's say. And given that, you have to know what it is you're talking about. I mean, that's absolutely right. Like the theses that I've seen that sort of take givens and almost like acknowledgments of, because yours is a very real project, sort of saying, here are real world conditions that are probably just going to be the case. Let's just plant that flag in the ground and operate around that. It's freeing in a way that you'd never imagine. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, the word thesis statement, I write when you're writing essays, everyone's like, you know, work on your thesis statement. That kind of defining what the fundamental question you're trying to answer and trying to make that as narrow as possible is going to help you, right? Because if it's too open-ended, then again, you're prone to just like not really answer anything.
Of course.
You know? Mm. But the more specific you can get with what it is you're addressing with your thesis, I think the more fruitful and useful it'll be to people.
Yeah.
Not that that's the only kind of end of why you do a thesis, but it is important that you're contributing to the overall knowledge, right?
Like, yeah,
your thesis is going to be at the University of Houston Library, yeah, both at the main library and the architecture library.
Yeah.
And in theory, you want people to, you know, 50 years from now, pull out Luis Martinez's thesis and be like, let's see what a monastery is about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's, you do need to think about it in those terms, right?
Yeah,
it's not a purely selfish thing, but it's like, what am I contributing to the overall knowledge of architecture?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
There are two things based on that I want to kind of spring onto. One of them is about drawing type, and the other is about the table, right? I'll start at the table and back up into drawing type. One thing that we had talked about a lot in thesis development was this idea that you're having a dinner table. Mm-hmm. Like, your thesis is essentially you inviting all of your friends to the party, right? The table does not have an infinite number of seats. Some seats have pride of place. Some seats are kind of off to the side. Some people you put like at the head. So do you have an idea right now who you would invite to your dinner table? Which architects, thinkers, religious figures? You know, maybe you have six, maybe you have 10 seats. Who's at the table? It's just a question in general. Maybe you know, we can talk about it. But I always found it really thought-provoking. Like, if this is a discussion about something that's kind of, there's a kind of intellectual project that people are, you know, fleshing out, giving life to, who do you invite to your table? Sometimes people are the gadfly and they're the kind of counterpoint. Sometimes they're, you're working on the shoulders of other people. You may very explicitly have someone who you're saying this is a continuation of their project architecturally. It may be a text, you know, at the table is, you know, you could kind of expand that out to say there's a building or a kind of not an entire body of work of a person, but a particular thing they've done. Yeah, do you know who you would invite to your dinner table right now?
I'm not sure yet. I don't know. I haven't read enough to get me started, but
yeah.
I think I would like to have John Senior there.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, but I think he would have an interesting perspective on it.
Yeah.
You know, obviously he has a lot.
Given his ties to the monastery. Yeah.
Yeah. Not only that, but also I remember in his book he briefly mentions, I guess it's mentioned in Father Francis Bethel's book, but he wrote a book where he mentioned some aspects of architecture, specifically in terms of the house of a family, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how it should be built, or like how simple it should be and what materials it should have. And he was just a smart guy in general. I think he had probably, or he would have some really interesting insights. So I'd like to have him there.
So you're not going to have any running water or electricity at your monastery?
Yeah, I guess so.
VR headsets. That's it. That's it.
No, he would be opposed to VR headsets.
No. He would roll over in his grave.
Yes.
Or toilets, yeah.
He was pretty extreme.
Yeah, he was.
But in a provocative way. Like,
yeah.
That's why he's useful.
In
a good
way,
sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's why I'm just interested in to hear what he would say, I guess.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think St. Francis de Sales, just because I like his writing. I also think he would have some poetic insight into like what it means to live as a monk, although, you know, he wasn't a monk, I don't believe. St. Benedict would be awesome.
Yeah.
Have there. And also some like of the older monastic figures, not, well, I guess there's two types of monasticism, right? Like eremitic or like hermit monks, and then cenobitic monks, or like community monks. I think early monastic figures like Saint Simeon or Simon, I don't know how you pronounce it, who was like a pilast who sat on top of a pillar for 37 years.
Yeah. One of the pillar sitters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all figures that probably have nothing to do with architecture, but I mean, they're way.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't know. It's a pillar. Yeah.
Your monastery is just going to be 37 pillars where all each monk.
That's it. Yeah.
By the way, your modernist professors would love that. They would think that's the greatest.
Oh, yeah. They would. Yeah. I was thinking about that. Maybe I should just make like a pillar monastery.
It's a small
just
scale.
A series of pillars.
It's a small scale plan voisin kind of
they
like.
Would love that. They would.
Pilotis, right?
Pilotis, yeah. 5 points. Yeah, does Corbusier have a seat at the table? As a as a kind maybe, of antithesis?
Maybe. Yeah, I would be interested to obviously hear from the opposing side,
yeah,
which I think Corbusier would very much be on the opposing side.
Yeah, as a kind of like proto-modernist, but
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, so I think I would have him. I think I would have also a mathematician called or named Nikos Salingaros.
Yeah.
Or Christopher Alexander, also just his work on, you know, patterns and all that, or ornamentation. Who else?
Is while you think about this, who's it for? Like, I know it's a building for monks, yeah, but ultimately, is this a thing that you are thinking is, let me give you a kind of false dualism here. Okay. Is this in the end so that we will better understand how to make beautiful monasteries? Or is this a thing that in the end is more centrally located on how the parish church should be built?
I think it could address both, just yeah, indirectly.
Which is prior, or which has priority?
Well, I don't feel like I am equipped to be the person who defines what a monastery should look like. I don't know. I feel iffy saying that yeah, would be the purpose of the thesis. But at the same time, I have to have some sort of like confidence, yeah, you know, to yeah, say, well, I have something to say or something to yeah, bring to the table. But I'm not sure. I think mainly how a monastery should look or could look in the future, mm-hmm, or in the, you know, by future, I mean like short term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Not, you know, 200, 300, 400 years from now. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I have no idea what the conditions will be there.
Sure. Sure.
But I think I would like to explore that question. Like, what can a monastery look like, mm-hmm, that is still beautiful, mm-hmm, and still relates to the soul and to our personhood, mm-hmm, but at the same time is kind of, in some ways, different than what we have seen for thousands of years, mm-hmm, right? Like, yeah, I want to maybe challenge or try to come up with innovative ideas, I guess.
Yeah.
Ways yeah, of using material, I don't know, but yeah, not in a chaotic way, like a lot of times in modernism or contemporary architecture, sure, happens, you know.
Yeah. One thing that could relate to the technology question, or the question of what your principal mode of investigation is, mm-hmm, you know, is it a site heavy thing? Is it a, you know, a roof? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that it has to be one of these things, but oftentimes it's like all about the structural system, or it's yeah, all about the way you skin the building. Is from a kind of representational perspective, which drawing will do your heavy lifting? Which of these things will be the thing after you've given your spiel and you, mm-hmm, when they start pummeling you with questions, they're going to go to one of these. And like most of the, it's been my experience in yeah, theses that one of the drawings is either most compelling or most winsome, or it does a lot of the legwork for you because that's the main thing. There's some drawings that rise and fall based on the quality of the section.
Yeah.
Both conceptually and technically, and how it relates to the thesis. Sometimes it's very plan heavy. Like building sections are almost, you do them because it's a building,
yeah,
but they're very plan heavy. Sometimes there's an isometric drawing, sometimes there's a rendering. And I think the answer right now is I don't know, because you said, I'm not entirely sure what the investigation is.
But I'm not sure, but I think perspective section might be really nice.
Yeah.
Rafa let me borrow one of his books on the plan of St. Gall.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's great.
And they have amazing drawings on there,
yeah,
or in there that I'd like to kind of copy.
Going are back. There perspective sections of that?
Yeah,
there. I've only seen the plan.
Yeah, wow. No, they're yeah.
Well, they're kind of modern interpretations.
Yeah, okay. They're recreations.
Oh yeah,
like from the sketches. Yeah, they're sketches.
The plan is from the 800s.
The modern architects that redid. Yeah, yeah.
The
okay.
That analyzed the
yeah.
Recreated yeah. them.
But they did yeah. some amazing drawings.
Yeah, there's some really nice.
That's awesome.
So I'd like to kind of. Get ideas from there. I mm-hmm. think there's a lot of potential in that book to mm-hmm. kind of just, like Rafa was saying, kind of delegating tasks to
right.
or like just borrowing from things that already exist so that absolutely. I don't have to spend time thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
They have some amazing perspective sections, really nice, just normal sections.
You know, one of the interesting things that I feel like in school, and I think modernism is very much all about this. Again, the reinvention of the world, you know. So like in school it was always like, you know, let's reinvent the library, you know, yeah. or let's yeah. reinvent the this or the that, you know. Mm-hmm. So it to me it would be fascinating from the outset, because you know, one of the things that people always want you to do is like, okay, how are you reinventing yeah. the monastery? But for you to be like, I'm not, that's not the point of this.
Yeah, that's
you know, like that actually the monastery works quite well. And, and that's not the point of my exploration. You know, the point of my exploration is to, you know, find new expressions for this, you know, for this type of building.
Yeah, that's some pushback that I'm expecting to get for sure, because everything, especially on a thesis project, it's like, what are you reinventing, or like what new thoughts are you producing that we haven't seen in the architecture community? I don't know, something like that. And I'm just going to say I'm not trying to reinvent.
It's not about, you know, to go back to the word, programmatic reinvention. So in other words, you're assuming the program, or for the most part. It is fundamentally an exploration of the expression of the architecture itself.
And how it can continue to develop, right? Like with, I guess we could mention organic development, not only in the liturgy, but like in architecture also, and in art. Like things shouldn't be static or just, you know, remain in one place.
The organic development of the liturgy is a good thing.
Yes. I think I'm not a rigid person that thinks we should just design buildings and not rethink anything that, you know.
Yeah.
But so that's what I'm going to bring to the table, I think, or that's how I'm going to word it and kind of try to defend it.
Rigidity is a bad thing? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that at all. But I think that organic progression is
right.
good.
Yeah.
And maybe I am reinventing certain things, perhaps. Yeah. Like I had an idea, and this might be kind of, I don't know. I think it's kind of cool, but we can
see
what you guys think. For example, have you been to Clear Creek, Chris?
I have not been there. No. Okay. Family plans have thwarted it 2 or 3 times now.
Okay, so there's many places where they do this, but when they raise the host in the consecration.
I've been to Norcia in Italy, where the kind of mother house of the Benedictines,
Okay, they ring the bell, right?
Yeah,
of course. But not only like the small bell that we're used to at our local parish, they ring the actual bell from the bell tower.
Yeah, yeah.
And so everyone can hear it around the land. Or
beautiful.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm
like, okay, that incorporates one of our senses, right? The sonic part of it. Mm. But what if we could start to incorporate other things? I mean, we have the technology to do so. So in the Mass, also when they raise the host, they do the incense, right? So why not incorporate some sort of...
campus-wide incensing?
So yeah, like smoke that comes out of the bell tower.
At
the same time. So then there's a visual to it. And if there's a farmer, like 10 miles, that can see the bell tower of the monastery, they can see the smoke rising and like know that, you know, Christ is present at that moment there in the abbey. I think that's beautiful.
And yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah,
things like that don't really exist, but why not? Like, you know, it's not contrary to church teaching. Yeah. It's not... But it's innovative in a way, or it's something new.
But it's not just why not. Why not is kind of like at the caprice of the designer. True. It's like what you're trying to do is express the reality sort of present at the liturgy more broadly to everyone.
Exactly.
So it's
not only like the sound of it anymore, it's also like a visual. And then
it's fitting. Yeah,
exactly. So, and then how could you incorporate more things like that? I don't know. I haven't thought about it enough.
Yeah.
But I think it's fun. I mean, I would love to see. And then going back to your question about... this could be incorporated in a little town church, right?
Yeah.
And if you're walking the streets of Paris or something, and then you see smoke come out of a bell tower of a church and then hear the sound, how beautiful would that image be, right?
Yeah.
Like knowing that the Eucharist is being transfigured at that exact moment and like seeing it in a way.
If these organic developments respond to their time and place, it could be that given our context of the majority of self-identifying Catholics not believing in the true presence, we've developed a series of these expressions of faith that they came about in the like late 2020s because most of the church didn't believe. So all of a sudden there's this huge wellspring of like Eucharistic devotion because it's tied to our place. So it's a kind of localized, like you say, invention that is it's befitting of our time. No, that's real interesting. At first, I have to say I wanted to push back against you saying, I don't know, like it's kind of neither and it's just for monks, but like I'm not really qualified to speak to the monastery. I think, consider this for now, that you should lean into the fact that it's not for parish churches, it's for monasteries.
Yeah.
But that if, like you say, things from like the bell tower incensing, there are things that you could draw from them because action springs from contemplation, yeah. and the monastery is prior to being active, it's a contemplative thing. And if the rest of the life of the faith is the action of the laity, they're operating on the bedrock of the prayers of the contemplatives.
Yeah, exactly.
So you could say like it's not for suburban churches. So, well, how's this going to affect whatever church in, you know, suburban rural North America? I say it's not about them. If they choose to take them, that's fine. But it's about thinking about really kind of ramping up the monastery life to.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I meant exactly. I guess I should have explained when I said that. But yeah, precisely that. I believe personally that the monastery is like the foundation of mm-hmm. the church life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
For the reasons you said, I mean, their prayers fuel the rest of the church.
Absolutely.
Which is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, ideas that are incorporated in in the design of a monastery, precisely for that reason, should be seen in other parts of or other, I guess, church types, mm-hmm. right? Like the town church or
sure.
a cathedral.
Absolutely.
Because we're kind of drawing our inspiration or drawing our inspiration from these monks.
Yeah.
So that's what I meant. Not necessarily that I'm going to address directly the design yeah. of a town church,
mm-hmm. yeah.
But rather like what can we get from,
yeah.
you know.
So let me ask you this question, if that's the case. So a lot of people have moved near Clear Creek.
Yeah.
And so there are faithful that on a regular basis go to the church, but it's very clear that the main purpose of that, of the Abbey Church, is not for the faithful because there's very limited seating. Have you thought about how much do you want to think about the laity as you develop this? You know,
that's
like,
do lay people
come, or is this like a really remote location where?
No, that's a really good question. I mean, I think that's another constraint I'm given, mm-hmm. just because the site already exists.
Right.
And I think there's already people moving close to where the Abbey will hopefully be. So I think I'll have to address it, but it is something that kind of crossed my mind, just because I think it's an interesting element to address, right? Part of the Benedictine spirituality is to welcome guests.
Absolutely.
And I find that interesting because then you have to give the guests a place, right? You have to then design a place for them in the monastery. You have to think about precisely those issues, like will there be seating in the main church, or, you know, a lot of seating in the main church for guests, or maybe is there a separate little chapel where they mainly come, you know? So I have to think about these things, and I do think it's something I want to address. Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure what I'm going to do for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. It may be that it's not just a monastery, but that it's all of the things that are related to a monastery,
yeah.
which means you may have like a small scale city plan.
Well, that's kind of the idea with the borrowing ideas from the plan of St. Gall,
mm-hmm.
Just because their plan was quite literally, I mean, like a small mm-hmm. town. They mm-hmm. had everything. They even had specific buildings for visitors. Mm-hmm. Rafa and I were looking at some images.
Sports fields
and
all sorts of stuff.
They slept with their horses quite literally right next to their horses.
Yeah, yeah.
So, designing these places in a new monastery, like obviously we don't ride horses anymore. Mm. So what does that look like now?
Yeah.
You know, we're not maybe going to be, maybe we could sleep next to horses. Why not?
Mm. Yeah, no, it's interesting.
You know, if your professors give you a hard time about doing this, you can just add to the description in a post-apocalyptic America.
Yeah.
Like they'll leave you alone. Because I remember going to a U of H thesis last year.
Yeah.
And it's just ridiculous. Like, a lot of the prizes were like, when climate change changes the world.
Oh,
and so they were like showing all these buildings like under, you know, like they're like
under like 50 feet of water. Yeah.
And it's like, so that's all you have to do. You know, you just have to go in and be like, okay, this is after the government has fallen. And then they'll be like, okay, great. That sounds good.
Yeah. No, that's funny. Because it's true. I mean, all these projects are just completely from out of this world.
Yeah,
quite literally.
But it's interesting to think about the fact that the monastery is the heart of the project, but that it gets as big as, I mean, it almost could be like an urban scale town planning project.
Yeah, that's
you know.
Those are my hopes, kind of, for the future. Probably not for the initial thesis proposal.
When
I present next year. But maybe just as a hobby for...
When the monks hire you.
Yeah, when the monks hire.
Do they have an actual site picked out?
Yeah, they have.
Okay, so you're going to use that site.
They're building a little chapel and stuff. Not the actual monastery, but so that's going to be my site.
Yeah, yeah. I wrote two notes as you were talking. One of them is how this relates to what would be known as the Benedict option. I'm going to pass on that one for right now.
Yeah.
But something we talked about is about...
This is quite literally the Benedict option.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I had to say it so we can circle back at it. Maybe it's a second discussion, but we're talking about, in some ways, responding hesitantly to using the word reinvention, right? Or innovation, because there's a sense in which that could be counterproductive, right? If you take tradition and you say we're going to innovate, what you're doing is basically saying we're taking tradition, but not like psych, pull that back. But one of the things that I have long held with regard to doing work for clients that hold tradition dear is that all the buildings you design they're not the beginning of a conversation. They are picking up after hundreds or thousands of years. And when you talk, my words are a response to your words, right? So if God began in the very beginning with the word and everything has been a kind of conversation with that first utterance. Yeah. That was good. I didn't plan on that one.
That was beautiful.
we're essentially continuing from that conversation. Your building, don't talk about it on their terms, basically. If your professors say, what are you reinventing? So it's not about reinvention. Yeah. It's about continuing a conversation.
Yeah.
And it is a response to things that have come before, to tradition and to the particular context of this and to the Benedictine sort of charism and to the needs of the people around the community. But what you're doing is you're sort of saying it's a response to very particular questions and problems.
Exactly.
And what you're investigating is the conversation that we have today is not situated in the year 1000 or the year zero. So we talk about things in a very contemporary way.
Yeah.
And you're going to talk about, in quotes, with your sort of words and your designs, current day things, right? We have, economic and sort of technical and... cultural norms that we just sort of take for granted. So I would push you to think about being really clear about what the near-term conversation has been.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say, what are you reinventing? You could sidestep the question and say, it's actually in response to these very few things, the people at your dinner table, the current state of Catholicism in the United States, and being clear about what those questions are, in particular, not just like comments, but questions. So if the building is a response to something, what is the prior question?
Yeah.
So that may be a really helpful way to go about framing what you're like.
And I think, if they push back on that, I think they're kind of being hypocritical, because I personally believe it's such a fundamentally architectural project or endeavor.
Yeah, very much so.
At the end of the day, architecture, where architects are given a set of constraints and respond to that, right?
Absolutely.
So this is basically, or at least I'm attempting to make this the most pure form of that.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, because I'm given a set of constraints that I cannot play around with even a little bit. Like, I can't bend them. And then trying to, be a creative despite those things.
Yeah.
And it might not be as fun for them as reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
But I think it's fundamentally architectural.
Yeah.
And if they push back, then I think it would be kind of critical.
Like, well, then there's a lecture that I attended back when I was in grad school, and Paul Lewis from Lewis Mackey Lewis came and gave a talk about some of his work, and a lot of it at the time, sustainability was kind of at the height of, not at the height, but maybe at we had reached peak green architecture and we were kind of tapering off.
Yeah.
And he had a line that he said that it really stuck with me, where he said, what architects do is we create the problems that we then try to solve.
Yeah.
And what he means by that is he says, this building was framed around sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And the most sustainable thing to do is not build a new building. But if you put solar panels on it and you put green stuff and you signal to the people that have money that what you're doing is about the things they care about, then you can then solve the problems of sustainability in the building because you made those the most important problems.
Yeah.
Other people will foreground political concerns or they'll foreground whatever. So the reason why it stuck out to me is I think it's true because we will talk with our clients about things that matter to them. And the thing that you're talking about is you're foregrounding. I mean, he talked about it in a way where it was like pure liberalism.
Yeah.
It was like, we're going to reinvent the world and we're going to say, here are the things that matter and I'm going to make them out of whole cloth. And it kind of doesn't matter because the building's awesome and it's what I choose to sort of arbitrarily rise to the top.
Yep.
But what you're doing is you're saying some of these things, you're doing what he's doing, but it's a lot more, it sounds like, taking things that are just given and taking things from the tradition, and you're still going to raise something to the fore, mm-hmm. but the things that the way that you're doing that is going to be, I think, maybe more grounded in what's actually the case, because it's a very real project.
You know, it's interesting, as we've been talking here, but as you've also been telling us about your thesis, this question, and this is, I'm just throwing this out there for your consideration, but it's almost like your thesis in some way, the fundamental question you're trying to answer is that of permanence? Mm-hmm. It's the idea that we live in a society where nothing is permanent, and in fact, the lack of permanence is celebrated as the highest ideal. Yeah. Nothing lasts, and that's the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything is constantly being
reinvented. Buy, Black Friday every day.
But you're proposing a project of a monastery, of an order, of a subset of that order who believes deeply in permanence and who is committed to being in this place until the second coming.
Yeah.
You know, and so it would be interesting for you to incorporate the question of permanence as well as the question of time as being completely different in a monastery than it is in the real world.
Yeah.
You know? So like, you know, I've mentioned to you like the whole idea of Rivendell, how time is different in Rivendell.
Yeah. I love that.
And Lord of the Rings. And so, and I told you that when I went to Clear Creek, that's how it feels.
No, you
know, like, it's Rivendell.
You feel like you're out of space and time because you're like,
you have
time really doesn't matter here. Your phone doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's Lorien, even better. Creek. Yeah.
You know?
Lorien predates Rivendell.
Yeah. And so I would just be interested if you know, to make this more like, I was thinking about how do you make this even more like a thesis from school?
Yeah.
And it's like, if you incorporate the question of time and permanence.
No, that's beautiful.
I think that's actually a really interesting question because we live in an age that doesn't value that at all.
Yeah.
Like, in fact, we look down on things that have been around for too long.
Yeah. Mm.
We question why they're still here, you know? And this is actually flipping that on its head and saying that I'm designing something that is going to be here for 1,000 years minimum.
That's good.
And then what does that mean? What does that mean for the architecture? What does that mean for the way the monastery works? Yeah.
I got goosebumps when you said that. And whenever you did your bell tower incense. So I got two chilies on there. That's good.
Because if you think about like the monastery life is inherently stable.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Yeah.
That actually the goal of a monastery is the lack of change.
Yeah.
If it changes, it's because something went wrong.
Yeah.
Mm.
Otherwise, it is a cycle of life that just is perpetuated forever.
Yeah. No, that's
right. The political and the economic are really going to matter in this.
Yeah. In regards to time.
But in a way, and the reason I started thinking about this was because of my joke about the end of the world.
Yeah.
But then I thought to myself, I was like, but wait a second. Like, it almost doesn't matter if the United States fell because I think Clear Creek would continue to operate.
Yeah.
Unless like somebody came and actually like overran the monastery, but
they almost
operate independently of whatever the government is doing and everything else.
No, they do.
Even and that's kind of the point.
Yeah, you know? I think even within church politics, because I've thought whenever we got all the traditional Latin mass restrictions, they kept going like they're their own thing, right? Mm-hmm. So not out of, I mean, they didn't disobey anyone. They're just, since they're their own order, they just could keep going. But in regards to the time comment, it's really fascinating because it seems like, and I can't remember where I read this, but it seems like the time, or time for a monk, for the life of a monk, moves in a circular fashion, where ours is kind of linear, or is intrinsically linear.
Yeah.
And theirs is just Yeah, circular. It's well, like the same thing.
That was the medieval again. Conception of time, was that it was a cycle.
Yeah.
And then it's in the Enlightenment that we begin to think about time.
Yeah, yeah. Time is linear. Yeah.
And
fact,
I think
it, in fact, yeah. what we say is that chronological time is a Protestant invention.
Yeah. No, but it's, and I think and you pews. See that reflected in our lives. Like the way we live our lives, us three, I do think reflects a kind of a linear pattern.
Sure.
But yeah, that's the if way you go to Clear Creek, you definitely see like a circular.
Yeah.
Because the monks do the same thing every day.
Yeah.
And they will
and
do
there's
so.
There's something so beautiful about like, that. And like,
till they die.
Just giving yourself you to know? That.
Yeah.
No,
it's shocking when you go and you, it, like we spent 4 days there, and I remember the last day, you know, just thinking like, I'm really glad I'm going home. Yes. Only because like it hit me just like, the way this life is a total. I mean, it's like a total giving, right?
Yeah. Mm.
In a way that like, I'm not prepared for, and frankly, it's not my vocation. So in a way, it was a very, it was like a.
Glad I did it. Glad I'm leaving.
I got an appreciation of my vocation, and I was like, okay.
But you see the beauty.
But you see the beauty and the radicalness of it. The fact that it's a radical way of life.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, this is amazing. They do this every day. I did for four days, and I'm ready to go home. You know?
Like, yeah.
So just think about like the detachment
and
the basement you have to do in order to get to that point. It's quite remarkable.
It is remarkable. Going back to the detachment, you know, and how that can reflect in the architecture, detachment from all of our life.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to say one more thing about the permanence thing that you can explore in the architecture. And you know, we talked a little bit about this, how the Abbey Church can represent the permanence of God. Yeah. So that's like super, super strong. But then some of these ancillary buildings may need to change with time. Like it actually needs to be updated because of this, that, and the other, so that you could even play in the way you develop the monastery with some things being really permanent, some things being somewhere in the middle, and then some things being totally like...
Quite literally, maybe quite like literally a tent like or
changing,
something.
You know?
Yeah. In, I don't know if there's a place for monks to chop wood.
I love
it. It could literally be like a tent.
I love this so much.
And it just constantly has to cycle through because... Or everything is pointing to the permanence of God, even within the structure of the architecture.
Exactly.
So good. This could be, because everything ultimately lands in board game land. This would be a great board game. You start with the chapel and you build your monastery, and then, and I'll say this, I think it should actually be part of your thesis. You could design like the monastery plan, like your plan of St. Gall, and then you say, this is it in 100 years, right? We've built everything, the cities around us, and there's a few potential futures, like the wired sort of like scenario planning. And you could say like 200 years from now, America doesn't exist, but this thing is still here.
Yep.
And because you have a kind of political and economic idea, like everyone's got chickens and we can all produce these things.
Yeah, that's another thing. Another consideration, which is relating to time, I guess. I mentioned we don't have horses now, but maybe in the future we will. I don't know.
Yeah, they could come back around.
Yeah, they could come back around. And
ran out of oil.
Yeah, the monastery needs to be
we're selling
able
it.
To adapt to those things. But the church could be the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Change.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that you could have a lot of fun with that, you know. Yeah. Of like, I mean, I don't know if this is just too crazy, but to set the timeline for your monastery, and it's like, actually, this is the year 2100.
Yeah.
And this is when my project is set. You know, it just like, I mean, maybe that's too out there, but it's kind of a fun exploration.
It would be, there was a thesis last year that I watched, and I think I could kind of adopt that idea and repurpose it for the monastery project and show different timelines of the monastery and then show how the buildings around the church
Absolutely.
Kind of are dilapidated.
Yeah.
But the church remains like the church is, and then show renderings of that, you know, chronologically. You know, speaking to the permanence of God essentially.
You can almost say like if there's a given construction material, you could do a little math and say it's going to take 185 years to build the building. That in 50 years, here's the building. The monks are still there. And then 100 years, they do this. In 200 years, here's the status. And fast forward another 400 years.
Yeah.
Like the whole sort of time thing, insofar, not just because it's fun, like it'd make a good Netflix movie, but, or don't watch Netflix, like delete your accounts if you're watching Netflix. Insofar as it feeds into this idea of what it means to design for a faith that plans to be around, like it's way more radical than like the American project.
Right.
Oh,
it's like this began 2,000 years ago and will continue to exist until you know, the heat death of the universe or Christ comes, whether they're the same point or not, one of them is going to happen. Like that's pretty like bold. So I really like the idea you mentioned, Rafa, about maybe leaning into sort of time.
I love that. I think
areas.
Yeah, I really like that.
It would be fun if you know, because you talked about how the life of a monk is cycles, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like if you could show the architectural cycle of renewal of the monastery. So you, like you said, you show it decaying, but then you see like, oh, they replaced the barn. Here's a new barn. You know what I mean? Yeah, so no, it just shows how like in a span of 500 years, the organism of the monastery has replaced itself.
That's beautiful. You know? Be cool. Even graphically, how you can display that in the thesis book at the end is really exciting. I mean, I know it's a kind of a tangent, but
no, it's awesome.
Yeah. And then like show the actual timeline.
Baptizing the first AI.
Yeah.
That's funny. Oh my gosh. Yeah, this
is
great.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, so we're getting close to an hour. This is awesome. Luis,
this was great.
Thank you. We're super excited.
I'm not going to lie. I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I'm excited. Well, you guys hopefully can be involved.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully this isn't the last discussion about it. We're glad to have you.
Another one in the middle and another one at the end.
Yeah. I think that's a wrap for this episode.
Thanks for joining us.
The Beauty Ever New podcast. Share and like and subscribe. And
tell your friends.
See you around later.